Friday, April 20th, 8 a.m. here in New York City. Public hearing impossible work session in House Bill 3507, House Bill 2779, House Bill 2412, House Bill 2261, work session in House Bill 2732, House Bill 2842, public hearing and work session in House Bill 2618, carried over from 418 agenda.
Zero.
I told him to make sure it passed, but if there was enough votes, I would vote no.
Yeah.
But there wasn't enough votes, and I would have to vote.
Yeah.
I voted yes, and then tried to change it.
I'm done.
I didn't line up.
Okay, thank you.
Too far.
Okay, good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the April 20th, 2007 session of the House Committee on Workforce and Economic Development. We are now in session. Due to either a lack of amendments or a lack of timely amendments, I am going to have to be holding over either hearings or work sessions on a number of bills today. I'll tell you which ones and hopefully dates on that. But I would just like to let the public know that from here on out, for the next week or so, we have to complete this committee's work by the end of the month. I know that that's put a lot of a pressure not only on the committee members, but the lobbyists and legislative council office. As a result, it's been very difficult for us to receive amendments in a timely fashion. I'm not assigning blame, but what I am telling the public is it is unfair to the committee, and it's also unfair to the chair to expect us to be able to work a bill and know what it is that we're working if we don't have the amendments in advance. Just in time is not adequate, not for the public process, not for this committee's process. Now, there may be instances where amendments come to a bill that's relatively simple, and I will feel that it will be appropriate for this committee to be able to act on that. But I do not believe that in the interests of good public policy that it is appropriate to be moving forward on a number of bills today. And for those of you who may have traveled a considerable distance for a bill, my apologies. But I will insist on good public policy. With that, the following bills. House Bill 2618 is scheduled today for a public hearing and work session. Representative Holby, we don't have the amendments at all, do we?
No.
No. Due to that, and I realize that there may well be some folks who have traveled considerable distance, I will take public testimony on that, but we will not be working the bill. House Bills 2732 and 2842, we just received the amendments. There's only amendments on 2842. Without anyone having had the advantage of being able to review those amendments in advance, I'm going to carry that work session over to Monday, this next Monday, the 23rd, along with the work session on Representative Holvey's House Bill 2618. With that, we're going to be having a memorial today to the Virginia Tech students, which will be occurring at 9 o'clock out on the West Lawn at the Old Dominion flag. We will be recessing this committee hearing at approximately 8:45.
Yeah, plenty of time.
Yeah, okay. At roughly 8:45, I'm going to recess this committee so that everyone can go out to the memorial. Following the memorial, we will come back into session here in this committee. My intention then is to hear first the public hearing on 2618, that's all we're doing, followed by House Bill 2412 and then House Bill 2261. Now, if we can get those bills done before the recess, then following the memorial, we'll come back and finish our agenda, which would be 3507 and 2779. Again, my apologies to the public for any inconvenience this has created for you. With that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2618. Ellen, if you would please summarize the bill for us.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. House Bill 2618 was carried over from our last agenda, and it prohibits employers from entering into public works contracts for which the contract price exceeds $350,000 unless the employer is an approved apprenticeship training agent.
Okay, thank you. And I have a couple of people signed up, and Representative Holby, I know that you had some testimony that you would like to enter into the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do, but I just also want to just touch briefly on the preliminary draft of the amendments. That the amendments are going to exclude the ODOT from this project for I believe it's 5 years on the 15%. A requirement portion of the bill. So I just wanted to make that clear, and also the $350,000 threshold is going to be moving up. So in the next amendment coming out. So those are probably some of the changes to the bill. There's some technical pieces of the bill that also change, but they're supposed to be done today. Or they're supposed to be done last yesterday, but I think they're coming out today, so hopefully we'll get a chance to get them to the committee administrator by day's end so that the public can have a chance at getting those before the Monday meeting. And with that, I appreciate the opportunity. I did receive testimony. And I'd like to hand out to the and read into the record. And this is from the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, AFL-CIO, District Council Number 5. And it is a letter of support for House Bill 2618. The International Union of Painters and Allied Trades District Council Number 5, who represent glaziers, industrial and commercial painters, floor covers, drywall finishers, and other miscellaneous finishing trades, is by way of this letter endorsing Oregon House Bill 2618. Oregon's construction community is aging, and it is imperative that Oregonians support and encourage contractors to participate in apprenticeship programs. By supporting this bill, we are ensuring a competent and safe workforce to responsibly build Oregon into the future. Sincerely, Michael D. Ball, Business Manager, Secretary Treasurer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Holby. Did you have anything further that you wanted to...
No, I think we just open up for testimony at this point. And,
all right. And for those of you who wish to testify, you'll have an opportunity today, or if you want to hold your testimony until Monday, either is fine. I have John Oshel and Association of Oregon Counties. Would you like to testify today, sir?
Yes, please.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Sorry I need to testify today. Unfortunately, I'll be out of town next week.
That's fine.
I noted his opposition, but frankly, I'm only opposed to one very small, well, way on big number. There's a lot of this bill we like. There's a lot we at the association support. We do believe that it is appropriate to work very hard to improve the apprenticeship. We need it in the trades we work with. In particular, I represent a lot of the folks that work on buildings and so forth. I forgot to say my name, didn't I? I am sorry. I am John O'Shell, the County Road Program Manager with the Association of Oregon Counties. We support the basic concepts of the bill. We support very much the requirements for training agents, and we think the threshold of $350,000 is appropriate for that training agents. Our problem comes with the threshold for the 15%. I have been working with Representative Holvey, and we've been trying to agree on a number, and frankly, in the last day, I've come up with some numbers that may help him. What I've been finding so far in Washington State, of course, has $1 million threshold, $2 million for public works projects. When I've been talking, and my concern is with the smaller numbers, of course, that if you get to the smaller crew sizes, and you're trying to get that you've got an apprentice with the other four or so journeymen with them, that we might not have a big enough crew size to get there if we get the number too small. And I've been talking to all my road folks, and I've been saying, hey, we need to get it up to $1 million. Well, I go out and talk to a few of my other friends that work with unions and so forth. They're saying, you know, it's a lot easier to get there if you're talking building a building. The vertical trades where you've got a lot higher ratio of the basically folks in there. And I'm wondering if maybe the way we need to get there is to have one number for basically the vertical construction and an exemption up to about $1 million for the highway and bridge projects. Once again, I like everything in the bill except that smaller number on the threshold. If we could get that up to $1 million, all of a sudden we're very supportive of this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Shell. Questions or comments? Yes, Representative Foley.
Thank you, John, for that, and I appreciate that. You know, I've looked around, too, and you know, Washington is at $1 million right now. They did come down from their $2 million, from what I understand. The city of Portland's at $200,000, and I have looked around at some other places that are substantially lower. And so, you know, I've gone up to $500,000 and am now considering $750,000. So I feel like I'm at a table where we're bargaining here over in committee, but I'm going to be moving this up to $750,000. So that's I hope that gets you there. I know you're a little, you're not prepared to say that.
Chair Witt, Representative Holby, $750,000 gets me to the point where I grimace and go away and stop complaining.
Thank you very much.
Well, grimace for me. Before you quit grimacing, in the smaller rural counties, and I'm not, I would be out of my league playing with the number, but I could count on your expertise. In the smaller counties, when we have a road project, will the 750,000, will we be able to provide the journey to supervise the apprentices? Will we be able to make it?
Basically, whether you're rural or urban, you still need the same number of workers out there. What happens, of course, is when you get in the rural, sometimes you have to bring folks in from out of town to do it. But once again, arguably it might be a little bit more difficult, but also to go with that, arguably it's maybe that's where you need more apprenticeships going out there to have the people qualified. So it's an issue, but it really is a full issue all the way around. I'm not sure it's an urban-rural split as far as what we need.
Yeah. It's the job, not where it is.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mr. Rochelle, thank you very much. Next I have Joe Barron. Good morning.
Good morning. Chairman Witt, member of the committee, my name is Joe Barron. I'm with the Pacific Northwest Regional Council of Carpenters. In 1980, I came to Oregon. For 6 years, I floundered around, did minimal wage jobs, temporary help. 1986, I had a chance to become an apprentice with the carpenters. And after that, everything changed. I had benefits for my family. I knew where I was going, and I've been a member of the carpenters for 21 years. I see now the need for the apprenticeship because, as the gentleman stated, our members are getting older, and we need more people to replace us. There's a building boom going on, and anything we can do for the apprenticeship is greatly appreciated. So, standing before you as a carpenter, we support this bill, and thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Thanks, Joe. I appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify on 2618 today? Okay, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing. Representative Dolan, do you think that...
I'm ready.
Is 20 minutes going to be...
I'll do 20 minutes.
Okay.
I'm so happy to be here, I'll do 5.
Okay. Great God. I'm going to open a public hearing now on House Bill 2412. Ellen, if you would please summarize what is only going to be a short half-life of this bill as it currently reads.
Short half-life. House Bill 2412, I'm only speaking to the Dash 1 amendments, and what those do is they create the Opportunity Expedition Fund in order to fund grant programs for high school students. It appropriates $70,000 out of the general fund.
Thank you very much, Representative Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I'm going to ask Representative Lem to keep an eye on my testimony, see if it matches what I wrote down and left up there on the counter.
Okay.
I don't need it. This bill is exciting for me because it's born in this committee, born of our efforts and a lot of help from some people. But basically, we took testimony and heard testimony that we need people to go into the journey programs. We also saw that those programs are experiencing an exodus of experienced workers. The Department of Education was in and showed us a chart that put vocational education as one of three credits that could be taken in high school. And so working with Ellen, and I can't thank Ellen enough, we tried to put together a program that would show our young people in high school what it meant to get involved in one of the trades. The advantages of that are so numerous that I couldn't finish this testimony in 20 minutes. We spent the better part of this session hearing the advantages there are for young people that go into the trades. So we put together a notion that we would try a pilot program. And that pilot program would bring students from surrounding high schools into the trade programs. They'd get one day to visit, approximately one day, and the details will be worked out, approximately one day to visit four or five trades, wherever we could put them together. There's enough money in the bill. I believe there's $70,000 in the bill there. That would give us a person to coordinate the effort. We have a little money in there to pay for the trip in. And then we would give one credit. And the idea of the credit is to give it some value for the school. So we talked about early in our days of holding our hearings in front of the Education Committee and perhaps having some of their hearings in here. This bill does that. I would like to take credit for it, but I had a lot of help from some very good people. The concept is bring them in, show them what it is, and I think we'll develop some people that want to participate in the trades. And with that, I'll turn it over to somebody that knows what's going on.
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, good morning. Really appreciate the work that Representative Dallum has done on this and seeing some vision. It kind of boiled up out of after all the things that you heard and then a visit he had out at the sheet metal training facility out in northeast Portland.
Brian, excuse me, would you introduce yourself to the record, please?
Brian Krieg for the Sheet Metal Contractors Association and the Sheet Metal Workers Local 16.
Thank you.
The program, the idea is based on some things that are already going on, and I have three of our industry folks that will come on right after me to explain a little bit about what we do in the way of trainings for teachers and for bringing high school folks out to see the training centers and getting some exposure to the trades. And I think the basic concept is that it would be nice to be able to allow a school, particular ones that are not in the metro areas, to be able to come in for a number of days, get some practical math application, see how there's reasons to take your math and science classes, and then also to apply that out in the labs that we have at the training centers in the region. And we have a number of the centers. We have support from many of the crafts behind this bill that would be willing to donate the time, the materials to make these courses and these weeks very productive for the kids. And I think that I'll end my testimony at this point so that you can bring the panel up.
Okay, very good. Before you leave, do you know who's going to be describing the amendments for us, or the amendment, the dash one?
Basically, the amendment changes the focus of the bill.
Okay.
And the amendment sets up a fund, and it sets up an administrator for the fund, sets up coordination, hires a half-time person. From that fund, we would literally pay miles, pay meals, pay motel. Students would come and visit the apprentice training programs, spend 5 days ferrying from one to the other. At the end of that time, they would do some pre-work. Now, that's not in the amendment, and some post-work, and because of the amount of time spent on the project, would receive high school credit for it. And that, in essence, is what the amendment does. It makes the entire process possible.
Representative Dahlem, I just, for the record, want to recognize your commitment to trying to extend apprenticeship opportunities to youth across the state. For your commitment to trying to expand this as an opportunity for increased workforce development, and for taking upon your own to develop this amendment and try and move this whole program. Thank you very, very much.
Chair Witt, when you go out and see the program and visit with Brian and see what opportunity there is for kids, it truly becomes a labor of love. It was fun to do.
Brian, thank you, too, for all of your help. Representative Polby?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was hoping to get a word in before the good representative got away. I really appreciate this. I think this is really, you know, with some of the other apprenticeship things we're trying to move through, is really going to be a great addition to what we're trying to achieve here. You know, if we do, in fact, get the Skill Up program that also works on some of those same programs, this is going to ensure that we can get that rural part of Oregon into the mix here much more efficiently. And of course, this is coming out of the general fund, and the Skill Up's coming out of corporate minimum, which we don't have. So at least I'll be very supportive of this, and I really appreciate your work on this as well. I think you know, the focus we got on apprenticeship is really going to be a big boost to our economy and the industry as well. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Tom Goodhue, Len Phillips, and Dick O'Connor.
Good morning, Chairman Witt, member of the committees. My name is Tom Goodhue. I'm the Executive Director of Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors National Association, located in the state of Oregon. I'm also the past president of Oregon Building Congress, and it's through those connections that I have a background and experience relative to doing the type of programs that Representative Dahlem is talking about. And to be very brief, because I know we're on a time schedule, but just to get it into the record, we want to say that we've worked on this. We're highly supportive of it. It's something that we have done locally, and we think that taking the vision of Representative Dahlem is something that I think needs to be fulfilled here and give those opportunities to kids outside of just the metropolitan Portland area. But with that, I'd like to speak in support of it. And it's a good opportunity for us to partner with public government. We're not asking to be paid for our facilities or anything else. That's something we want to donate to the process.
Thank you very much, Todd. Just make the comment that, you know, it's the it's that facility that you all run, and the operation, as well as the training and education program that's available there, that I think is worthy of this kind of project. So thank you very much for your contribution as well.
Good morning, Chairman Witt and representatives. My name is Len Phillips. I'm the business manager, financial secretary, treasurer for the Sheet Metal Workers Local Union 16. I'm here to provide our full support to the representative in his efforts. And we need to remember that most of our kids don't go to college, but yet our high school system seems to be pushing kids to college, and actually 3 out of 4 high school students don't continue on to college. And I think the representative is working on something that really provides them with an opportunity to see that there is other things out there, that if they choose not to go to college, there are opportunities where they can make a decent living and good wages. Along with that, by bringing them into the training centers and showing them with the different training centers that the requirements for math and for sciences in the construction industry are very important. And for the high school student to know that if they're not going to college, they still need math, they still need science, it's a good reason to help keep them in school and keep them from dropping out, so they know that a lot of times, unfortunately, high school students think, and a lot of people think, if you drop out of school, you can go get in construction. The reality of it is that can happen, but it's also, if you want to succeed, you need the skills. The thing that we believe that this will provide for the people from bringing them in from the outlying areas is to show them the practicality of what math does for them. Instead of, I remember in high school, my dad told me, take math, take math, take math. And I sat there in math classes and took it and couldn't figure out how this was going to relate to the real world. And once I got into craft, the lights came on and I saw how it really worked. To get them to have the light come on is where it's very important. And it also helps the teachers when they come over, parents that come over with them, along with the counselors, to give them a little more insight to what the crafts do. All the crafts are very supportive of apprenticeship and teaching people. One last thing in closing, I just want to let you know that Bill Clueling from the Carpenters Council got a hold of us before we came in this morning. He would like to have been here to express his support of this, but he wasn't able to, so he asked us to let you know that he was in full support of this also. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Dick O'Connor. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Building Congress. In the amendment, we're mentioned as the administrator of this program, and it is the type of program we have been conducting for most of the last 10 years. We have also had good relationships with state government. As an example, on Wednesday we signed a contract with Oregon OSHA to bring construction technology teachers from all over the state of Oregon to become certified in safety so that they in turn can certify their students. We just completed a program in Pendleton and in Portland with ODOT, where we had students experience what it's like to be a construction manager and an engineer. And it was during spring break, and we had 20 students participate in the program. And I have to say, because I was in Pendleton with those students, the industry would give its eye teeth to get kids like that into the apprenticeship program. They have a fabulous work ethic. They've worked with their hands. They've grown up on ranches or farms, and boy, they're, you know, and they were smart kids. It was really impressive. We also got word yesterday from the State Department of Education that our proposal for a charter school organized around architecture, construction, and engineering was approved. So we'll start our planning grant with four East Multnomah County school districts: Gresham Barrow, Reynolds, Centennial, and Park Rose. So we're very much in the education business. We've conducted teacher workshops where the teachers have just been flabbergasted when they learn how the construction industry uses math and how it's applied. And I have to tell one story and then I'll be quiet. But I struggled in math as a student, and in fact, when I wrote my doctoral dissertation, it was an experimental study and involved a lot of statistics, and my advisor, who was a gentle, kind man, said, "Dick, you can think well and you can write well, but you don't calculate very well." And he says, "We'll give you the PhD if you promise never to write one of these again." So I said, "Okay." Well, Jerry Galarno, who's been executive director of the Sheet Metal Training Center that you all have visited, came up to me, he says, "Dick, you struggled in math, didn't you?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Let me show you how we teach trigonometry." So he introduced me to Ralph Schaefer, who was kind of like the dean of the math program at the Sheet Metal Training Center. And he gave me a 5-minute lesson on sine curves. I understood what he said, and I think I had, it was like an epiphany. Oh my God, I now understand what a sine is, how it's derived, how it's used to build things, especially, you know, when they're round. And I began even extrapolating formulas. And so this is, you know, from a person who's not strong in math. And then I said, "Ralph, how would you like to do this in front of math teachers?" And he said, "Great." He says, "Let's do it." And we put together what I call the dream team, and they have taught hundreds, literally hundreds, almost thousands of teachers who have come away saying, "We had no idea." And they've also given these apprenticeship trainers A pluses as teachers, that they're outstanding. So these students are going to be exposed to that. They're going to see the connection of math and how it can be useful in a trade. They'll see the reason they have to stay in high school, and they will be pointed to a career that pays. From a person that's strong in math. And then I said, "Ralph, how would you like to do this in front of math teachers?" And he said, "Great." He says, "Let's do it." And we put together what I call the dream team, and they have taught hundreds, literally hundreds, almost thousands of teachers who have come away saying, "We had no idea." And they've also given these apprenticeship trainers A pluses as teachers, that they're outstanding. So these students are going to be exposed to that. They're going to see the connection of math and how it can be useful in a trade. They'll see the reason they have to stay in high school, and they will be pointed to a career that pays great
great incomes with great benefits. And I think the industry is going to be delighted to have more of the rural Oregonians coming to the training centers. This is going to be a big plus for the industry. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions, Representative Colby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I couldn't resist just making a comment to Mr. O'Connor. He probably doesn't remember, but back in the late 90s, I was involved with chairman of a joint apprenticeship training committee, and we hosted the Oregon Building Congress down in Eugene, where they came down and did one of these presentations to a group of teachers. And it was a very successful endeavor, and we had a teacher come out of that that is still just really pushing kids towards apprenticeship, because he saw the connection between math and the practical world of construction. And that piece of your program, I think, is really important, because it's not just the kids we need to get to. We really need to get to those teachers, too, and I hope you never give up on that effort. And I commend your efforts over the years.
Thank you. Very gracious.
Gentlemen, thank you very, very much, and thank you for the kind of program that you run. That is what merits introducing the youth of this state to apprenticeship, and we're fortunate that that you have this kind of facility that we can use with regard to the program that the Representative Dahlem envisions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Class act.
Thank you.
Jeff Dean, can you do it in literally a minute or so? Hey, that'd be great. Love you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeff Dean with Associated Builders and Contractors. When we saw these amendments, I just wanted to come up and say that we're very appreciative of Representative Dahlem's effort in this regard. Recruitment into the trades is a very important issue right now for the construction industry, and we're pleased to see you guys heading in this direction, and we'd be willing to help out in any way possible. So, with that, any questions?
15 seconds. I'm not seeing any. You're great. Thank you very, very much. Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to testify on House Bill 2412 this morning? I'm not seeing anyone. I'm going to close the public hearing on that bill, and I am now going to recess the committee until after the Virginia Tech Memorial, which is going to take place out on the West Lawn at the Old Dominion Virginia State Flag. We'll see you back here a little after the hour. Development, and because of the lack of a quorum, we are in subcommittee. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2261, and ask, please, Steve Sims, if you'd come forward. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Whip, subcommittee members, I guess.
Steven Sims, Administrator for the Apprenticeship and Training Division of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. I'm simply here to report that when this matter was last heard, I believe it was March 21st, Representative Strum, Independent Electrical Contractors of Oregon, Associated Builders and Contractors, and Oregon Building Trades Association requested some minor adjustments to the bill. I would like to report that those changes are reflected in the Dash 1 amendment and are acceptable to the Bureau and to the individuals who requested those changes, and we support the bill as amended.
Thank you very much. Can you briefly go over what those amendments do?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. With respect to the amendment that appears on, let's see, page four at the very top of the page, the First Amendment clarifies that in making appointments to the State Apprenticeship and Training Council, as originally drafted, it states that the individuals shall make their application to the State Council. That is incorrect. Appointments are made by the Governor. So we have inserted Governor at line one on page four in place of the word Council. Below that, lines 3 through 14 stated a long laundry list of qualifications that the Bureau had proposed that individuals who sought membership on the State Council had to fulfill. And it obviously is a relatively long list. Various members of the apprenticeship community felt that that might have been too exclusive or may have excluded individuals who could have done a fine job serving the council. Therefore, they have requested the qualifications that appear on the dash one amendments between lines 6 and 10, basically stating that in order to be appointed to the State Council, an individual must document active participation on an apprenticeship governing body for a minimum of 4 years, or 4 years of experience in workforce development, workforce investment activities, vocational training, or education, apprenticeship program, administration, or related disciplines. So we're basically broadening that scope of people who can sit on the State Council, but ensuring they all have a connection to apprenticeship or vocational educational training. Finally, on page 5 at line 39, regarding the approval of new apprenticeship programs, basically there's a statement that the council will approve as many apprenticeship programs that are necessary to fulfill the state's needs for workers. At the request of the Oregon Building Trades Council, they felt that in the building and construction trades, because of the cost of training in the construction industry, that it was not in our best interest to have single employer programs. An example being, a single employer could not run a successful operating engineer program. They would not have adequate equipment, backhoes, cranes, etc. Most of our programs, in fact, currently all of our programs in the building and construction trades are group programs with multiple employers. Therefore, the amendment that appears starting at line 9 of the dash 1 amendment states that local joint apprenticeship committees in the building and construction occupations may be approved by the council only as group programs serving multiple employers. I believe that that's probably in everyone's best interest. It's the most economical use of our training assets by grouping those resources that the employers can put together. And that concludes the dash 1 amendments.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sims. Certainly appreciate that. Committee members, any questions? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Barry.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify today on House Bill 2261? I'm not seeing anyone. Committee members, would... Anyone opposed to going into work session? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2261 and open a work session on the same bill.
Do we need it other dash one amendment?
We do, Vice Chair Lim.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash one amendment to the House Bill 2261.
Vice Chair Lim moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2261. Discussion on the motion? I'm not seeing any. Is there any objection? I'm not seeing any either. The dash one amendments are adopted to House Bill 2261. On the bill?
Is this moving to the floor further?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Vice Chairman.
I move with the House Bill 2261 as amended to the floor with the two pass recommendations.
Vice Chair Lim moves House Bill 2261 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. On the motion, questions, discussion? Not hearing any. Barry, would you please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Excuse?
Representative Dell.
Aye.
Representative Drott.
Aye.
Representative Wolby.
Aye.
Vice Chair Lynn.
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley.
Excuse?
Chair Witt.
Aye. House Bill 2261, having received the necessary majority, is moved to the House floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any reason why this should not be placed on the consent agenda? Not seeing any. All right, we'll place it on the consent agenda and... the bill is adopted as is. Thank you. I'm going to close the work session on that bill as well. Next up,
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Representative, are you interested in moving 2412?
I am. I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2412.
Chair, I move the amendments to the dash one amendments to House Bill 22.
Representative Dahlem moves the dash one amendment to House Bill 2412. On that motion, not seeing any discussion. Is there any objection? Not seeing any there. Dash one amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2412 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dahlem moves House Bill 2412, I believe as amended, Representative?
As amended. Thank you.
To the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Not seeing. On the question, Barry, please call the roll.
Representative Barnhart.
Excused.
Representative Dell.
Aye.
Representative Drott.
Aye.
Representative Wolby.
Aye.
Vice Chair Lynn.
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley.
Excused.
Chair Witt.
Votes aye. House Bill 2412, as amended, having received the necessary majority, is moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any reason why this should not be placed on the consent calendar? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much, and I will close the work session on House Bill 2412. Thank you very much. Next up on today's agenda, we have House Bills... I'm going to open a public hearing on hearings on House Bills 3507 and 2779. If you would, Ellen, please give a summary of the bill.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Regarding House Bill 2779, House Bill 3507, the dash one amendments to 2779 incorporate House Bill 3507. And so what those amendments do, they create an income and corporate excise tax credits for businesses. It requires the Oregon Economic Community and Development Department to review applications and pre-certified businesses applying for the income or corporate excise tax credits. It prohibits businesses who claim long-term enterprise zone corporate excise tax credits from also claiming these credits. Certifications may only be issued between October 2008 and December 2013. It allows taxpayers to carry forward unused credits, and it has a subsequent referral to revenue.
Thank you very much, and I'd like to call up, please, Representative Reed. Please do.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Tobias Reed, State Representative for District 27, here to introduce House Bill 2779 to you. Thanks for having the hearing, and thanks for opening it with in conjunction with another one that has a very similar concept. Representative Bruner and I introduced the bill at the request of the Software Association because of the industry's potential. Some of you know that I'm one of the youngest members of the legislature, second member of the 5 Under 35 Caucus. I don't speak for that group today, but one of the issues that brings us together in addition to our age is our commitment to the future, and that's, I think, one of the reasons we're particularly excited about this concept. When I'm not in the Capitol, I work at Nike. Many of you know that, the story of Oregon's only Fortune 500 company, founded on a handshake, and its commitment to innovation and center on the development of ideas and on people. So I think the history of that is clear and a good example of the potential that the development of ideas and intellectual capital can have for Oregon. I think that's clear, and one of the keys to our economic future is the creation and support of jobs and companies whose work is centered on intellectual capital. Not to say that we should abandon more physically capital-intensive industries, and indeed in the committee that the chair and I serve on together, we've seen proposals to support new investments in machinery and equipment. But House Bill 2779 seeks to support new investment in people through a tax credit on payroll. Recognizing that this is a new approach, the bill sets a number of limits on the proposal, and Jack will talk about those specifically in the amendments. But just in general, we've created a system that would require application to and certification by the Economic and Community Development Department, a program that would sunset in 2013, so we'd have a chance to assess whether it's effective, see if it works. And essentially, it's a business development tax credit that's equal to 3% of the increase in payroll, or 5% in areas that are designated as economically distressed areas, capped at $500,000 per claim, and be a limited number of certifications. And one of the, it only would apply to new job creation. I think this is a particularly important point. There's a clawback provision. If the job does not continue, the awardee of the credit would be responsible for paying the credit back. So I think it has some good provisions. Let me just close with a quote from one of my favorite authors, Tom Friedman, in his book, The World is Flat. I suspect many of you have read. He's writing about the country as a whole, but I think what he says applies to Oregon, really, as well. He says, America as a whole will do fine in a flat world with free trade, provided it continues to churn out knowledge workers who are able to produce idea-based goods that can be sold globally, and who are able to fill the knowledge jobs that will be created as we not only expand the global economy, but connect all the knowledge pools in the world. This is the key. There may be a limit to the number of good factory jobs in the world, but there is no limit
the number of idea-generated jobs in the world. And I think that applies to Oregon really well, underscores the importance of committing to the education system and creating an environment that can support the creation and development of new idea-based jobs. So I appreciate your hearing. Happy to answer questions, and I'll turn it over to Jack.
Thank you very much, Representative Reed. Comments, questions by the committee? Yes, Representative
Reed. Just looking for the definition of a depressed area, and perhaps you can save me the search.
I think it would, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Allen, it would be the Economic and Community Development Department who would designate it, but there are, I know that has also been the subject of some of the amendments, so I'll probably turn that question to Jack.
For the record, Chair Witt, members of the committee, Jack Gesselman, Tom Cantora, preparing for the Software Association of Oregon, Representative Dallin, Chair Witt. The definition of distressed areas is in Chapter 285 of the Economic Development Statute. I cannot recall it verbatim from my time at the department. Art Fish is in the audience today. He probably does have it memorized. He's the Enterprise Zone Manager. It is the same definition that applies to enterprise zones. There is a function, I believe, of per capita wage that's factored into that. We could bring Art up to speak to the definition specifically. But we're not creating a new distressed area term. It's the distressed area that we use for other incentives that are on the books. And there's a function of a wage in there, and there may be a function of gross county product, but I don't recall the specifics of it.
Unemployment is included in the
unemployment is included. That is correct.
Yeah,
unemployment is included.
Further questions,
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Polley.
Thank you. I might have missed this in your opening statement, Representative or Jack, but what is the, is there a particular wage requirement for being, the above the average of the county or above the average of the area? I'm sure there must be.
Representative Hovey, Chair Witt, the bill, and this was one of the amendments that we put into the bill to tighten the requirements. You have to, in addition to creating five new full-time hires to be eligible for the credit, you must have 150% of county per capita income, and we actually have a list of that I can leave with the committee, what the current 150% ratio in each of Oregon's 36 counties is, but in order to be eligible for this credit, you need to be creating your average payroll has to be above that level.
Yes, Representative, follow up on that. I'm kind of curious, in current statutes we sometimes talk about median wages as opposed to average wages, and sometimes average wages include the CEOs of the companies, which really skews the figures somewhat, so I'm sort of curious about that aspect of it, and in terms of, is this consistent with other economic and development requirements, or do we have some that also include median wages?
Representative Holy Chair Witt, I believe average wage is used elsewhere in the Economic Development Statute, as well as other places in the ORS, for various types of prerequisites to provisions of law. Median wage is also used in other contexts. We did not it was not something that we spent a lot of time reflecting on in terms of median versus average. We did look at the average figures for all 36 counties and felt that really if you weren't creating an average payroll, you know, the example in Washington County is in the ballpark, and I'm doing this from memory, but, you know, 50, 55,000, you get down to more rural areas of the state, that drops to the low 30,000s. And we felt, you know, in those communities, those figures seemed appropriate as an average payroll. If you were, and bearing in mind also that you're going to get a higher credit typically in those areas that have a lower average payroll because they'll meet that definition of distressed.
Well, Mr. Chairman, please. Well, I bring that up not to disparage the idea of the bill. I think it's still great. I just sometimes worry with some smaller companies, you could have a company where one person makes six figures and everybody else is making minimum wage and still meet the requirement of the bill. So that, you know, I guess I'm just having a little trouble with that aspect of it as well.
Okay, Representative Gerard.
It might be in the bill as well, but I can't find it. Is there anything that prevents a company from laying off people in one side and then hiring them back on the other and claiming the credit?
Representative Gerard, Chair Witt, yes, there is, and we just received the amendments, obviously, this morning, but there is a provision that employment has to be static or better. I believe this is at Section 10, which is page 6, if I can find it here. Yes, Section 10, subsection B of the bill.
Can you hold on just for a second? Because I think we're shifting papers here and everybody's looking for it.
Certainly.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, I believe the dash one and then it should be in your folders. Is that correct, Barry?
I didn't get them.
Okay, and maybe I stole them from him. Yeah, I thought I just misplaced mine. Maybe we didn't get them. Here. It's not at all unusual for me to misplace them here. So.
This one is.
Yeah. What I'm going to do is.
I know there's copies back here on the rack. Do you want to?
Public
phone. Those are probably your copies. It's kind of hard
after my turn that desk the other way. Did we all lose them? I didn't think it had that early. I lose mine all the time. But can we adapt to move forward?
There we go. A process of continuous improvement.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's not your
account. Okay.
So, Representative Gerard, Chair Witt, to your question, the delay has given me an opportunity to find it in the bill, so thank you. At Section 10, Subsection B, in order to maintain the certification for the credit and, in fact, receive the credit, you'll see it at Subsection B of Section 10, page 6, the combined... It's up line 7. It begins at line 7. The combined annual full-time equivalent employment at the facility and the combined annual full-time equivalent employment of the certified business firm elsewhere in the state must increase or stay the same. So you have to have static or better employment from the increased payroll for which you're seeking the credit. You cannot be a net job shedder or shifter and remain eligible for this credit.
One other question, please.
Please.
Thank you, Chair. Is there any limit as to the size of the company in this bill that can claim the credit?
Representative Gerard, Chair Witt, we do not have a limit on size, although of the company that can claim the credit. We have limited the credit to a $500,000 limit, which In fact, perhaps for larger companies that benefit from other types of tax credits and larger operations, the value of that is such that there's reasonably this is tailored more towards smaller employers. Moreover, the department has the ability to certify who gets the credit, and under the amendments, the number of certifications is limited to a finite amount, at least in this first period through 2013, when the department's ability to extend these credits will cease. So the characteristics of a smaller firm can be taken into account, and we believe the bill, we don't want to unduly focus it so it doesn't, the credit doesn't receive utilization, but we do believe the credit will be targeted towards smaller employers. And I should add, there is an exemption for companies who are participating in the long-term enterprise zone. They cannot claim this credit. That's where, so in essence, there's no double dipping of that kind where you get the property tax abatement. I think you'll find in those cases, once your larger employers have significant real property needs, they're going to opt for the enterprise zone if that's available to them in a distressed area, because that's going to be a better benefit.
Jack, if you could just a little more distance from the
I'm sorry about that.
Starting to distort. Yes, sorry. Thank you.
Just one last comment, maybe a little question with it. The problem I have is I don't think we need to subsidize Nike with a tax credit if they want to expand. However, small businesses, especially in rural areas, I think by all means we need to a tax credit. It would be a really beneficial thing. So I would like to see some type of cap as to the size of the company.
Representative Gerard, Chair Witt, to your question, the delay is giving me an opportunity to find it in the bill, so thank you. At Section 10, Subsection B, in order to maintain the certification for the credit and, in fact, receive the credit, you'll see it at Subsection B of Section 10, page 6, the combined... It's at line 7. It begins at line 7. The combined annual full-time equivalent employment at the facility and the combined annual full-time equivalent employment of the certified business firm elsewhere in the state must increase or stay the same. So you have to have static or better employment from the increased payroll for which you're seeking the credit. You cannot be a net job shedder or shifter and remain eligible for this credit.
One other question, please.
Please.
Thank you, Charlie. Is there any limit as to the size of the company in this bill that can claim the credit?
We, Representative Gerard, Chair Witt, we do not have a limit on size, although of the company that can claim the credit. We have limited the credit to a $500,000 limit, which, in fact, perhaps for larger companies that benefit from other types of tax credits and larger operations, the value of that is such that there's reasonably large, this is tailored more towards smaller employers. Moreover, the department has the ability to certify who gets the credit, and under the amendments, the number of certifications is limited to a finite amount, at least in this first period through 2013, when the department's ability to extend these credits will cease. So the characteristics of a smaller firm can be taken into account, and we believe the bill, we don't want to unduly focus it so it doesn't, the credit doesn't receive utilization, but we do believe the credit will be targeted towards smaller employers. And I should add, there is an exemption for companies who are participating in the long-term enterprise zone. They cannot claim this credit.
So in essence, there's no double dipping of that kind where you get the property tax abatement. I think you'll find in those cases, once your larger employers have significant real property needs, they're going to opt for the enterprise zone if that's available to them in a distressed area, because that's going to be a better benefit.
Jack, if you could just a little more distance from the
mic. Oh, sorry about that.
That's starting to distort. Yes,
sorry.
Thank you.
Just one last comment, maybe a little question with it. The problem I have is I don't think we need to subsidize Nike with a tax credit if they want to expand. However, small businesses, especially in rural areas, I think by all means we need to a tax credit. It would be a really beneficial thing. So I would like to see some type of cap as to the size of the company that can claim the credit. The $500,000 cap seemed awful large in the reference that you're only going to, I think it's a $20 million, isn't it a $20 million allotment for the tax? Isn't that what we're calculating here?
Chair Witt, in the original version of the bill, we had a $20 million credit. That's been amended out of the bill, and the way we get at it here essentially would be to limit the number of certifications.
And Jack, with that, I'm going to ask you to, as quickly as we can, we have at least one more set of witnesses.
Right.
But if you could just take it from the top and run us quickly through the bill.
Yes.
Or the amendments.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Quickly through the amendments, the concept remains the same. This is a payroll tax credit. We have decreased the amount of the tax credit to a statewide from 10% to a statewide payroll credit of 3%, and as we've discussed, 5% in distressed areas of the state, using the distressed area definition that prevails under the Oregon Economic Development Code at Chapter 285. We have added a biennial limit on the number of certifications. We've left that blank, and I think that will get at essentially the revenue impact. What we are looking to do, to be frank, is to pilot the program. And we recognize that we are in a budgetary environment where both fiscal and revenue expenditures are being monitored very carefully. And so we are amenable to any decrease in number of certifications that the Revenue Committee feels is advisable. The program will not start until October 2008. That gives OECDD an opportunity to develop some rules for the certification, get the certification process in place, and also limits the fiscal impact of the new tax credit. The tax credit can be claimed over 3 years. That is the same as the original bill. However, it is now capped at $500,000 per claim with a five-year carry forward. As Representative Reed testified, we've added a clawback feature to the bill where the credit has to be repaid if the qualifications for the credit are no longer met. We've created three new requirements for the credit, as we've discussed, 150% of per county capita income. You must create five new full-time hires with that payroll above that rate. And as we've discussed, employment must be static or better statewide for employers who avail themselves of this tax credit. Other than that, it's exactly the same as the original. And one of the things we were trying to accomplish with this bill was bring in concepts of House Bill 3507, which Chair Witt is a co-sponsor of, and that's how we came up with the 3% and the 5% differentiation for distressed areas, which is a fundamental tenet of his bill.
Representative Bowen.
Jack, I'd like to thank you for coming by my office. And when we put the formula out, and I looked particularly at Wheeler County, Sherman County, Gillum County, which I think Portland has more kids absent today than we do in all three counties. But the point was that gross salary, and if we did a small company in any one of those three counties, or Washoe County, When we look at gross, the officers of the company's salaries could increase horrendously. And when we did the formula, it made a nice, it made a, on the assumption that we would go one and a half times the county average. I created some very nice jobs in the rural area, but that gross thing, I think, could distort exactly what happens on the ground.
Representative Down, Chairwick, I do want to clarify, maybe I didn't make this clear before, it's 150% of county per capita income. So it is across the entire county. So it's not 150% of the employer. It's 150% of all wage earners in the county.
Let me make it crystal clear, Jack, so I understand. If this company came to Mitchell and hired five people, those five people, regardless of what anybody else made, would have to make, and I think the Mitchell median salary was $31,000. They were at $45,000 when we did the formulas. Those people would have to make $45,000 or better. And those individuals, not the CEO, because it says gross, and I've circled several times, annual gross payroll, and when we did the formula, it was on individual paycheck.
Representative Valen Chairwick, yeah, the payroll for the business has to be, the average payroll has to be above that figure,
right,
under to claim this tax credit. Let me review the amendment to make sure I have that right. But
I'm on page page 6, line 11, line 16, line 18, line 22.
Right. 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 So at line 11 on page 6, the increase in annual gross payroll at the facility divided by the change in the full-time equivalent employment must be greater. So in other words, the jobs that are created are measured against that, under this formula, against that 150% per capita. So you have a, who was the person who said they were bad in math here before? Because I can probably beat them at that. But you have a annual gross payroll at the facility. So what the facility makes overall, that is your numerator. That'll be divided by the new jobs that are created, the aggregate of that. The figure that emerges from that calculation must be equal to or greater than the county per capita. 150% the county per capita.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
Further questions or comments? Yes, Representative Holby.
Oh, no comment, Mr. Chair. Sorry.
None at all. Okay. Jack, you look like you're ready to say something.
Chair Witt, I was just hoping we might be able to invite up, in the time we have left, some witnesses from software companies who have come a long way to talk about their experiences in economic development in the state and outside of the state. And then I'd be happy to receive any further questions.
Okay, very good. Just one comment. In the rush for everybody to try and get amendments and everything, I just want to compliment you, Jack, on the fact that if any of the lobbyists in the building is wondering how to do this procedure, you came every day. You kept us apprised of where the amendments were, when we could expect them out. You came and you briefed me. I think you briefed other members of the committee. Came here today and presented the amendments, and that's a paragon right there. I'm thank you very much for the way you've handled this.
Thanks, Chair.
Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call up, please, Harvey Matthews, Stephen King, and Doug Pill, please.
Good morning. morning, Chair Witt.
Good morning.
To the committee. My name is Harvey Mathis. I'm the president of the Software Association. My job here today is to briefly introduce our guest speakers, and then if you have any questions, I want to deal with those. But they, as Jack said, have come a long ways, and I do want to recognize that. So without any further ado, I know Stephen has a 10 o'clock meeting, so we'll hit him first. Stephen, both Doug and Stephen are leaders in the high-tech community. They import jobs here to Oregon. They create jobs almost by breeding. So these are people that have a lot of influence on our bottom line with the general fund. So, Stephen, if you wouldn't mind going first. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning.
Welcome.
Okay. Nice to meet you. Maybe I'll just give you my background quickly by way of introduction, and then I wanted to give you the specific case of a company I recently had that we ended up moving from Oregon to Vancouver, British Columbia. And I wanted to just go through the reasons for that. I'm actually originally English, now American, graduated at London University. Tektronix brought me to Oregon 22 years ago. I left for a brief instance to go and live in Munich, where I ran their video business. Came back, did an internal startup, which is now Tut Systems, which is an Oregon-based company. Then went to Silicon Valley, did a startup down there, also in the video space. Came back to do a turnaround in Oregon called Merint, a software company. And then I've had two software startups since then. One was called Marquee in the marketing automation space, and my recent company is called OpenMake Systems, which is in what I call nerdy software for nerd space, which is build automation. I wanted to spend the time here, though, on the case of Marquee. Marquee was a company that was founded in marketing automation. We grew it to about $3 million and decided to move the company to Vancouver, British Columbia. I chose not to go with the company, so I'm on its board, but that's where it's based. The reasons were that the high-tech industry in Vancouver, B.C., has seen phenomenal growth. 2006, their high-tech business will actually hit $8.8 billion. $3 billion of that will come from software and $1 billion from video, two spaces I'm familiar with, so about $4 billion. That drives about 72,000 jobs in that space. With the average income, and this is not a medium, it's an average, the average income of about $1,100 per week. Those are Canadian dollars. It turns out that the CEO question up there is really not particularly relevant because there's very few CEOs, something they've struggled with. The Canadians have this kind of, well, we need to have head offices, and but it's really much more of a sort of development center. The reason we moved there versus Oregon in this particular case was that most of the Oregon and Portland credits were very capital intensive. They assumed that you had things like buildings and machinery and infrastructure and assets on the balance sheet. Software companies in general have very few assets on the balance sheet. Those assets are in the heads of the people that we employ and attract to a place like Oregon from all over the world. The program in Vancouver is different to this one, but essentially what it was for every engineer you hired, up to, I think it was $2 million, they gave you a 50% tax credit back. And they didn't actually give you a credit, they wrote you a check. So in my first year of operation up there, I got a $400,000 check back from the British Columbia. This has clearly resulted in tremendous results, as I pointed out with some of the numbers. I think that software grew from 2005 to 2006, 10% up there, and the video space grew 20%, so to $1 billion in one case and $3 billion in the other. I see no reason, and no demographic reason, or no infrastructure reason why Oregon can't replicate the success of British Columbia.
their weather is actually worse than ours. So I see no real reason. I think this bill is a step in that direction.
Thank you very, very much. Recognizing that Mr. King has another appointment, any questions? Yes, Representative Dahlem?
Yes, I do want to get you on your way, and I see that the CEO question is probably irrelevant, but given we've heard in committee here that technology likes to cluster or industries like to cluster, I have a vision of software companies moving out into the hinterland. Is this enough incentive to take a company out beyond the cluster and beyond their usual neighborhood of comfort?
Well, I think that there's a few locations that are attracting software type and video people today. Northeast Portland, for instance, is attracting a tremendous number of people like that. They tend to look for the funkier areas. They want to be in nature. A lot of people are working from home. My company today has no offices. We have 25 employees. None of them have offices. One of my employees lives in eastern Oregon. I have one that lives in eastern Washington, as it turns out. So I wouldn't expect to find companies moving to these regions, but there's absolutely no reason why people won't choose to do so and choose to live where. And the nice thing about software and the ability to essentially, with the internet, live wherever you choose, people are choosing to live in wherever they grew up. That's one of our benefits. And so I don't think it's a slightly different model than you're suggesting. I don't think you're suddenly going to see a building with a sign up. But if somebody wants to live in the countryside or live by the water, by the coast, or live out in central Oregon, that's the sort of model that at least we have.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Having to rework my concept here.
Right. Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The same line of questions. And you mentioned that Vancouver, they give you a 50% of the tax credit. And ours is just 3% and 5%. Am I correct? And how could we compete with Vancouver?
Well, I think at the moment you can't, given that somebody's making that choice. But bear in mind that Vancouver is in Canada and we're in the U.S., and people make decisions to live in different places for a variety of different reasons. Otherwise, the entire world would move to India, as an example. And so my company that I've started now, I'm very committed to Oregon. I think people choose to live in Oregon. It's a very beautiful place. And, in fact, the choice to live in Canada is not entirely open to everybody because of immigration laws and all sorts of other reasons. So I don't think you want to consider it as a sort of direct competitor, although I do want to sort of bring it to your consciousness because it is only an hour away. But I think steps that incent business that aren't entirely tied to capital and assets is the direction we should be taking Oregon to bring in those types of businesses, because those types of people are already moving here. If you look around Oregon, I know a guy that just moved here from New York who's an analyst on open source software. Great example. I know video producers that are moving here. Not film so much, but video. And they're coming here, and the unemployment rate in Oregon is not changing. And that's sort of the explanation for why so many people move here, and yet the unemployment rate kind of stays flat as they're bringing jobs and things with them. So I think that, we can look at it as a competitive scenario, in which case we should say, what's the SWOT on British Columbia, and what's the SWOT on Oregon? And I think that would be a reasonable thing to do, but I just think this bill is a step in the right direction. I'm not suggesting that somebody making the choice I made would make the choice any differently, although it's a move in that direction.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Representative Foley.
I'm real happy that you're looking at Oregon, and I know trying to compete with British Columbia is always tough for us here, but I'm sure that they have a much different tax structure there as opposed to Oregon, which enables them to provide greater incentives than we're able to.
You mean individual tax?
Just their whole tax structure, I believe. You know, not just individual, but also business tax.
It's a little bit of a myth. My income tax in Vancouver was 36%, and in Oregon was 34%.
Mm. What about the business tax?
Business taxes, I don't have those specifics. Capital gains is more attractive up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Additional questions? Mr. King, realize that you need to be other places, so please feel free to leave.
I brought the 2006 stats on British Columbia. I'll leave them behind if anybody chooses to.
Thank you very, very much for your testimony, and thank you very, very much for your commitment to Oregon and our economy.
You're welcome.
I would also like to introduce Doug Hill, who is a recent immigrant to Oregon. The Software Association's mission is to get companies to start here. As Stephen mentioned, he's a serial entrepreneur, to grow here, which we think this bill does, and then to move here. And Doug is a great example of what we did right and what we did wrong in as a state, and what we can do better, I think, is what he's talking about today. Thank you, Doug.
Welcome, Mr. Pill.
Thank you. Chairman Witt, members of the committee, appreciate your time this morning. I'll just give you a brief introduction to MathStar. I won't go into a lot of detail in the interest of time, but basically we're a semiconductor company. We have developed one of the world's highest performance, what's called a programmable logic chip. We're entering a number of different markets with this chip, including things like medical imaging, video processing, a number of defense-related applications, anything that requires very, very high performance of mathematical algorithms is the market that we're really addressing. Just as an example, our chip basically does 400 billion calculations per second. So anything that requires a lot of computing power, those are the markets that we're very interested in. The company was started by me in Minnesota in 1997. We put together a group of very talented design engineers, essentially silicon design engineers, that built a prototype of the company. But as we were entering the commercialization phase of the company and really moving into full-scale production, I really felt that the resources, the technical resources, management resources in Minnesota, although it's a great place, I've lived there all my life until recently, in particular in the semiconductor industry, there wasn't the wealth of talent that I felt we really needed to expand the company and, as I said, get into the commercialization phase. So we started looking around at various places where there would be more of a concentration of semiconductor talent, and obviously with Intel's presence here for many, many years now, this and many other companies that have kind of, as someone commented earlier, I believe it was Representative Dahlin, you said tech companies tend to cluster, and that's absolutely true. So we're located out in Hillsboro, where there's a very strong technical center, but there were several areas we looked at, including Texas, obviously California, being a very really the world center of semiconductor technology. But in the end, we really explored more seriously coming to Oregon. And we went through the process of talking to a number of state agencies about funds that would be available. As Steve mentioned, most of the programs were really directed at companies that either were building very intensive capital equipment, like semiconductor fabrication facilities, things like that, or heavy investment in real property development. Neither of those were true in our case. We were building intellectual property and looking to hire a number of people and move a number of people into Oregon. So we went through the process, but there really wasn't any any program. Now, obviously, we ended up making the decision to move to Oregon in spite of that, but this certainly would have, I'm a strong supporter of this bill, would certainly have been an added incentive for us to really shorten the decision process and say we're going to move here. Just a couple of facts. We began the move to Oregon in early 2005, around March of 2005. I hired the first employee here was Dan Sweeney, our chief operating officer, and from that we built the organization. Today in Hillsboro we have 57 employees. We have another 20 scattered really in sales offices and still a small design center in Minnesota, but the bulk of our employees now are located right here in Hillsboro. Our average salary is over $120,000 a year. These are very highly talented, highly trained, technical individuals. Over a third of our employees have advanced degrees in various technical fields. In 2006, our annualized payroll was $5.7 million just for the employees here in Oregon, and we paid roughly $470,000 in withholding taxes on that employee base. So that's a brief history of MathStar, why we moved here, and what we do. So happy to entertain any questions.
Mr. Pill, thank you very, very much. Any questions or comments from the committee?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chairman.
Are you under the program of SIT program or Enterprise Zone in the area at all?
No, we're not. Okay. We did look at that, and we really didn't qualify for that program.
Okay. Not seeing anything further. Mr. Pill, thank you also for your commitment to Oregon and Oregon's economy. Final comment?
Chair Witt, if I could just make a final comment. On behalf of the Oregon Economic Development Association, an organization that I'm an ex officio of from my time over at the Department of Economic Development, and this group is really comprised of the frontline economic development workers in all of your communities. They engage with companies when, like MathStar, when they come looking. They have submitted written testimony for your consideration today. They are strongly supportive of this package. The reality is, while we have Mr. Peel here today to speak on behalf of MathStar, this group will tell you, and I'm well aware, that there are lots of other companies that aren't here, because when we sit down and have the discussion with them, we just don't have a tool that we're able to offer based on the type of investment that they're going to make in intellectual capital. I think that's summarized in the testimony that's been delivered on behalf of the Oregon Economic Development Association, and I'm happy to report their support of House Bill 2779.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate your testimony, gentlemen, and the commitment of all the companies that you represent to Oregon and to Oregon's economy.
We really appreciate your collaborating with us with your bill and working with Jack so closely on that. Thank you, Chair Witt.
Thank you very, very much, Harvey. Appreciate that. Good day to all of you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wishes to testify today on House Bill 2779 or 3507? I'm not seeing anyone. I'm going to close the public hearing on both bills. And I am going to open a work session on House Bill 2779. And committee members, just for your reference, this bill has a considerable way to go yet. First to revenue and then to ways and means, so I'm sure that the proponents of the bill would appreciate it getting past the first committee today at least. What's your preference?
What is your preference, Chair?
Revenue.
Revenue?
Yes.
With recommendation or without recommendation?
I would be open to a discussion in the committee.
First of all, we've got to move the dash ones. I'll move the dash one amendments.
Okay. Representative Gerard moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2779. Discussion on that motion, please. I'm not hearing any. Is there any objection to the adoption of those amendments? I'm not seeing any. They're adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2779 to the Revenue Committee as amended.
Representative Gerard moves House Bill 2779 as amended to the Revenue Committee. Discussion on the motion.
Having said that, I think that there needs to be a couple changes for me personally. Mm-hmm. But I agree with trying to get it through the process. One is I do believe there needs to be a cap on the size of the corporation, and that could be maybe limiting it to S-corps instead of C-corps or something that would limit the size of the cap. Both the size of the business taking the credit and the size of the cap that's coming out. I want to get it going.
Thank you, Representative Gerard. Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, I agree with Representative Gerard in trying to keep this bill moving through the process. I think it's got great merit. However, I do have a slight concern on the definition of annual gross payroll as they're comparing it to the annual per capita.
Gerard moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2779. Discussion on that motion, please. I'm not hearing any. Is there any objection to the adoption of those amendments? I'm not seeing any. They're adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2779 to the Revenue Committee as amended.
Representative Gerard moves House Bill 2779 as amended to the Revenue Committee. Discussion on the motion.
Having said that, I think that there needs to be a couple changes for me personally. Mm-hmm. I agree with trying to get it through the process. One is I do believe there needs to be a cap on the size of the corporation, and that could be maybe limiting it to S-corps instead of C-corps or something that would limit the size of the cap. Both the size of the business taking the credit and the size of the cap that's giving out. I want to get it going.
Thank you, Representative Gerard. Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, I agree with Representative Gerard in trying to keep this bill moving through the process. I think it's got great merit. However, I do have a slight concern on the definition of annual gross payroll as they're comparing it to the annual per capita personal income level published by the Bureau of Economic Analysis of the United States Department for the county average wage, that we're really comparing apples to apples there. I'm concerned about their definition of annual gross payroll as it compares to what is we consider the county per capita income. All the things that are in the definition of annual gross payroll are also in that particular income. So, and I'm not saying there's a difference. I'd just like to know that they're the same.
Okay, proponents of the bill catching these points.
Go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
The time is available. I'd like to hear from the Art Fisher from the OECD, and do you think you can do it today or at some other time?
Vice Chairman, I've closed the public hearing already, and we're substantially beyond our schedule. If give some consideration to his testimony, perhaps before the Revenue Committee.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
Representative Cole, point of clarification: if we pass 2779 as amended, 3507 doesn't have to move. Do I understand that correctly?
That's correct, Representative Bowen.
And then just a comment. The concept of the bill I wouldn't want to hold it up a minute. I'm ready to move it. Wherever it has, let's move it. Let's do something with it.
That sounds like a potentially motion, Representative Dahlem, to revenue.
That's the clearest motion I might have made today.
I want to make sure my motion does include a recommendation.
Okay. Representative Dahlem, before you move, Representative Gerard?
I want to clarify my recommendation to move House Bill 2779 to the Revenue Committee with two pass recommendation.
Representative Gerard moves House Bill 2779 as amended to the Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation. On that motion, not hearing any discussion. On the question, Barry, would you please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
Excused.
Representative Dahlem?
Aye.
Representative Grant?
Aye.
Representative Olvik?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lynn?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ryder?
Excused.
Chair Witt?
Aye. House Bill 2779, as amended, having received the necessary majority, is on its way to the Revenue Committee. And I close the work session on that bill. Whoops. Reopen.
3507?
No, we're all set. We're closed. Thank you. That was my point of confusion. Thank you very, very much. Ellen, could you please, before we adjourn, give us a brief review of what we're going to do Monday?
Thank you, Chair Whip, members of the committee. On Monday, April 23rd at 8 a.m. here in Hearing Room C, you'll have a work session on House Joint Resolution 15, which encourages the governor to designate state ambassadors. You'll have a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2831, which makes legislative findings on the effects of international outsourcing. You'll have a work session on House Bill 3418, which establishes the Oregon Main Street Program, a work session on House Joint Memorial 13, which is discussing ratifying a free trade agreement with Taiwan that has amendments. And we've carried over 2618, a work session on that bill. And we've carried over 2732 and 2842 for work session also on Monday.
Would you have any time to be able to send a list to the committee members of what we're going to be doing Monday?
Chair Witt, thank you. Actually, we'll be publishing a revised agenda immediately after this, and I'd be happy to forward that to the committee members.
Thank you very much. That'd be very helpful. Further business to come before our committee today? Seeing none, we are adjourned. Thank you.